I always say we do our three main things are encouragement, empathy, and empowerment. And, you know, not only to say like, you can do this, but more, I get it. I understand. I'm empathizing. And then it empowers people to move forward and be the best wife and the best mother and the best, you know, employee and the best Eved Hashem, you know, and we want people to be the best versions of themselves.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivki Silver.
And this is Deep Meaningful Conversations, powered by Meaningful Minute,
the podcast where we explore the complexities, nuances, and joys of being a frum woman. Welcome, all our listeners, to Deep Meaningful Conversations. This is our 20th episode of DMC, and we are so glad you've joined us.
Yay!
Today, we're talking about mental health. So let's get some facts down. Right before the pandemic in 2019, God, it feels like longer than that ago, yeah. Doesn't it? Almost 20% of adults in America experienced mental illness, which that equals 50 million Americans.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of people. Over half of adults with a mental illness don't receive treatment. Just imagine that. Like
walking around,
untreated. Exactly. That's 27 million adults. There's also a growing percentage of youth that live with major depression, 15%. It's a lot. So the rates of substance abuse have also been on steady rise for youth and adults, even prior to the pandemic. And we'll link the study done in 2022 in our show notes.
Also, according to the World Health Organization, the pandemic triggered a 25% increase in prevalence of anxiety and depression worldwide. So all of this should prove to us that mental illness is a very common illness. And we're going to say that again. It's very common. As a global society, we certainly have come a long way in acknowledging mental illness. You can think of like how it used to be in the 50s and 60s, you know?
Oh, forget it. Yeah, exactly.
You know, self-medicating with the alcohol at the end of every night. But nonetheless, I think what globally we're struggling with today is how, you know, enabling everyone to actually receive the treatment that they need to address their mental illness.
Right. We can acknowledge that it exists, but now the question is, how do we actually make treatment accessible for everyone?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So my next question, Alex, is there a stigma surrounding mental illness in the frum community?
Right.
What do you think?
Right. Wow. What a huge question. And who am I to answer that? Okay. Just as like an onlooker, as someone who's just sort of aware of, you know, the media in our community, the frum media, and, you know, I don't know, discussions in organizations. I think there's been tremendous growth in terms of awareness, in terms of the need for organizations. There are many, many organizations devoted to, you know, mental health awareness and providing support and providing professionals. We have Nala, who I'd love to give a shout out to here in Cleveland.
Yes.
You know, it's like if you're in the frum community and you need a therapist, you can call Nala and be like, hi, what's my next step? And they can help you.
Exactly.
And they're not alone. We have these organizations, you know, we have national organizations and we have local organizations. I think we've done a great job. I think, you know, in terms of media, our magazines do a very good job in raising issues of mental health. I would say so much so to a fault and to an extent where you've got girls who are like going into Shadufa and are like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm marrying a guy with bipolar because this is what the articles are all about. And I'm not joking about bipolar. You're going to see it's very relevant in this episode. But like in a way, like we're so aware of it. We're almost like worried that like, you know, what, and especially with Shidduchim, it can be,
well, yeah, with
whatever, yeah. Just whatever. So I think that we're doing well, but I think when it comes to like certain areas of entry, and what I mean by that is, I know someone reached out to me sharing a concern. She wanted me to write an article about this, actually, about like seminary applications where, and I haven't done this research myself, so I'm taking her word for it, but asking if the applicant has any mental health issues.
Oh, it's like an intake question?
That is what she shared with me. I don't know how across the board it is.
Right.
I don't know how common it is. According to my friend, she was saying it's very common. I don't know. You know, I haven't seen it for myself. I haven't found out. But that's that barrier to entry. Like, who's going to be crazy enough to be like, yeah, I don't want to say, and I feel bad even saying this, but because the stakes are so high in getting into these institutions, yeah. and it's like, so now I'm going to share that here's something that now you may not want me for, but I'm on medication, but I'm on therapy. I don't, you know.
Interesting. So I guess I can see both ways, 100%. Right. Like that is also where my brain went first of like, that's going to be a barrier to entry. But then at the same time, like I wouldn't want to send a child who has a condition that needs to be managed to another country to a completely potentially destabilizing situation.
Absolutely.
Without alerting the people who are going to be taking care of the child
right.
for a period of time that this is what the child goes through, this right. is what could be helpful, and this is the medications that need to be managed,
right.
you know?
And like, therefore the seminaries and yeshivas, like, I don't know if it applies to yeshivas, so you need to know so that
100%.
If they're asking in the sense that we need to know because we need to know what we're dealing with and
also
we need to be able
liability,
to provide,
yeah.
and provide
Achrayas.
Support. Achrayas also provides support. That's great. That's
yeah.
great. I just don't know what the motives are. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Perhaps I am being idealistic and naive
so
in assuming that might be.
I didn't do my research coming into this episode of DMC to find out.
Right,
know,
if anyone
exactly.
knows, if anyone is running a seminary and they are listening to this episode, please email us, dmc@meaningfulmeaning.org.
All I know from my friend's perspective, she was very, very upset about this, like that it was more of a negative situation. Anyway, barriers to entry also with Shidduchim. You know, they're... Because we want everything to be perfect and we're checking every single detail out. And, you know, listen, yes, obviously being married to someone with a mental health issue is going to make things more challenging, even if they are being treated. It's not, but guess what? Nothing is perfect. Nothing is smooth
right.
sailing.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say more challenging because you know that specific challenge. Like, people,
uh-huh.
you know,
that's
like, you don't
point.
Know, you could have a challenge with Parnassa, you could have a challenge
excellent.
With infertility.
Yeah.
No one knows what challenge
yes.
they're going to encounter. And also, by the way, I'm sorry. Sometimes there are mental illnesses that come up after a person is already married and you could do all your research and then it could still be something that your child is meant to go through.
Exactly.
It's, I don't know. I feel like it's just,
yeah.
Yeah. But, but shidduchim. We can always just say shidduchim.
And something you say, Rivki, a little bit later is like how having, you know, going through the struggle and dealing with something builds resilience and builds grit. And there are many wonderful aspects of a person's personality, you know,
it
so
can,
I,
you know.
I
I feel like it's right. It's like tzarech in. It's like, okay, this is a situation. So are they? Have they gone to therapy? Have they been treating themselves? Have
right.
they grown through it, or have they not? Like,
exactly.
you know.
And
so
those are the type of questions. Not that does this person have a mental illness, because when you look at the numbers, that's the whole point. It is so common that someone's going to have something.
Yes.
So you can't filter everything out. The question now is: this person has anxiety. Mazel tov. Okay, so does a third of the population. How does this person deal with
exactly.
it? How are they? Are
exactly.
they? Are they dealing with
exactly.
it?
Exactly. That's the
so
question.
That's the question.
Exactly.
So yeah, those are my thoughts on if it's a stigma.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, it's interesting when you were mentioning about the magazines and publications. It's true. I have been consistently impressed with how the media has been increasing awareness and I think helping to decrease stigma by
yeah.
writing about it. And there was a book that came out recently by Chaya Rachel Zimmerman called Lemons in the Fog. It's a novel. And the protagonist has a mental illness and it goes through this journey with him. And I was just thinking, like, it's, you know, protagonist of novels, not a side character, but a main character. And this is something that also just kind of brings it to the forefront of these are things that happen to many people that we know. Like, everyone knows someone with mental illness.
Right.
It's like not something that's happening somewhere else. It's happening all around
right.
us. Also, we had gotten an email. We love getting emails from Dr. Chaya Liba Kopernik, who runs a practice in Jerusalem, the CBT DBT Center, which specializes in, as you might expect, CBT DBT therapy. Dr. Kopernik is passionate about getting better quality mental health care to the Frum community, improving training for Frum mental health professionals, and increasing community education around evidence-based mental health care. That means mental health care that has proven to have results, not just like, as Zahava says later in our interview, talk and talk and talk. Like, there's different modalities, and different modalities treat different issues, and there's evidence to support, like, what is helpful for what issue, and, like, that's what she would love for people to just get matched up with the right people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very curious about her perspective on the topic, and I had a conversation with her via Zoom. And the whole conversation was enjoyable and enlightening. She's very articulate. And there are three points that she made that I found really fascinating that I just want to share quickly here.
Great.
So she acknowledged that Frum Society has made a lot of headway as far as how we interact with mental illness. But she noticed that in her practice, there's now a sort of like there's a kosher diagnoses and non-kosher diagnoses. Like there's mental health challenges that people are more willing to acknowledge that they have, and there are ones that are still kind of shrouded a little bit more in stigma.
So interesting. So the stigma has decreased, but there's still certain stigma about certain illnesses.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Right. And then another thing that was really fascinating to me was she mentioned how accommodations, which are good, you know, our kids have IEPs in school, there's accommodations being made for certain challenges, but she said that if we're not careful, they can actually become a barrier to growth. Because in seeking to understand and help support those who have mental health struggles, we could inadvertently accommodate it so much that they're never forced to actually do the work to overcome it. And then it's interesting how our brain works. If a person has anxiety and there's a certain situation that makes them feel anxious and then they avoid it, it really creates neural pathways in their brain that teaches their brain, no, this is actually a dangerous situation. And then it can make the anxiety worse.
I totally hear this.
Right. And then another thing that she had mentioned was almost like over-identifying with the diagnosis, which could then also prevent making progress with treatment. So, you know, seeing that, you know, anxiety or OCD or whatever is an integral part of one's identity is, and seeing that it's a condition that can be managed, but not like the only part of your personality, you know, like to say it's part of who you are. It doesn't define who you are, but it shouldn't be used as an excuse to not move forward. I'm not, God forbid, I'm not trying to, you know, blame or be judgmental or anything like that, but she was just saying that it could be used as, oh, it's just anxiety, so I can't do anything. You know, as a, oh, I'm just, this is my condition, so I can't do anything.
And I don't do XYZ because of this, anxiety.
Right, exactly. And I think that it's a very fine line between acknowledging the real limitations that may be going on, you know, with the condition 100%, you know, like you can't just tell someone who's depressed, oh, just think good and it will be good. You know, you'll be fine. You're doing this to yourself. No. Please, I am not saying that, but to get the right treatment and the right care to be able to say, yes, I have depression, but look at all the things I can still do.
I
thought it was very interesting, that conversation with her.
I'm so glad we can highlight that here. Also, we are highlighting in today's episode a very special guest who we invited, who due to her own mental health journey, and when we talk about mental health journey, you're going to see how open she is in sharing what exactly she struggles with. Mind-boggling. Mind-boggling how open she is. So I hope you all stay on and listen. She was inspired to actually found an organization to support from women in their own mental health journeys. So she took her experience and her struggle and she gave back. And this special woman is Zahava List. Zahava List is the founder of Chazkenu. And Rivki, you've known Zahava for a while, right?
Yes, I have. It's really funny because when you suggested having her, I was like, oh, Zahava, of course. We should for sure have her. Zahava and her husband are both from St. Louis, and her in-laws actually made Sheva Brachos for me. When I was in seminary, she was living in Eretz Israel. She was living in Har Nof, and I was at Neve, also in Har Nof. And so every Thursday night, I did like my chesed hours by her. I would go and I would peel potatoes. We would have like a lot of DMCs in her kitchen. And I'm so thrilled to now bring the DMC to the DMC podcast. It's like just such a pleasure. And this is all pre-Chazkenu. I knew her way back in the day.
Such a small world. So as I mentioned, she's the founder of Chazkenu. It provides chizuk for all Jewish women coping with mental illness. And she's going to be telling us more exactly about, you know, the type of grassroots support they provide, how they're really making a difference in terms of dispelling any stigma surrounding mental health in our communities. So I'm so inspired by her and the work she's been able to accomplish in this space, and really can't wait to share this conversation with all of you.
By the end of today's episode, we hope you come away feeling inspired by one woman's mental health journey and have developed a greater awareness about mental health issues facing so many of us in our communities. And here is our interview with Zahava. Welcome, Zahava. We are thrilled that you are joining us on DMC today. We're going to jump right in. Could you share a bit about your personal mental health journey with us and why you founded Chazkenu?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I'm very humbled to be here with your lineup that you have and choosing me to talk about this, and also just the topic, the fact that you're bringing this up. So mental illness comes along with a lot of different, you know, assumptions, and, you know, everyone has different opinions about it. But just to get you into my own journey. So I was 23 years old. I had been married for 10 months and just had a new baby. And just 10 days by the time that happened, after the baby, I was starting to show symptoms of mania. My mood was completely out of control. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't eating. I wasn't really like in this world. I was just totally out of reality. I was doing more and more things that were just so not in, you know, my personality. I was saying things like, you know, totally uninhibited. I always say like I didn't even need to use drug and alcohol to be totally high and out of reality. You know, one of the things I was doing is I was calling different rabbis and asking them if they were Mashiach. You know, I was calling my friends after I had just had a baby, where usually you're talking about your baby, your birth story or whatever. And I'm telling people like all these different things. I'm analyzing them. I'm trying to figure out all their problems. And I was also starting to see that I was telling things like to my husband that, you know, things from my past, from my childhood that I was not even aware of. Different things, different trauma that came up that was suppressed inside me. But now that my subconscious was out and the trauma from the birth and everything, being so vulnerable and open, that really triggered this response. So I really do believe that it was based on the traumatic childhood, that, you know, parts of my childhood. And I then, you know, it came out as a bipolar. With postpartum psychosis inducing it. I, Baruch Hashem, it was like such a nice, I had a neighbor who was so put together. She was like my role model. I wanted to have a Shabbos table like hers. I wanted to be the type of wife and mother she was. And she came to me and she said, Zahava, you need help. I was like, everyone else needs help. I'm fine. Like, what's wrong? And she said, I'm telling you, you have some kind of postpartum response, and you have, you know, your mood is fluctuating, you're not sleeping, you're not eating, something's really wrong. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she said to me, she's like, I know
this. Where were you living at this time? You were in Eretz Israel?
Yes. So I was in Israel, far away from family and home and everything. And it was really my husband and then my in-laws came, you know, for the simcha, and they just didn't know what to do with me. So she was contacted, through a roundabout way. And then she was telling me, I know this because you, are going through something that I went through, and I had the same thing. And it was after her second, she has 8 kids, Kanan and her, and it was after her second was born. And she was telling me that she went to a doctor, went to a psychiatrist, she got medication, and she went to therapy, and she's living and thriving. And Baruch Hashem, like, I fought it till the end, but I went to the psychiatrist the next day. And again, he was telling me, you know, I was still into my, you know, visions and all these things that I was out of reality. And he said, you need to go on medication. And again, I was like, medication. I don't want to be on medication, but and that is something that people hesitate to do. And I just saw that after I went on medication and I did end up getting into a low, that's usually what happens, it like drops, and it was very, very painful. And then I started therapy, and that was like where it began. My first 10 years after, I had 7 episodes, and it's funny, you guys have episodes too, but what I mean by episodes is, you know, I had, you know, relapses in it. I had to have a lot of medication changes. I had, I've been through a lot of therapy, a lot of different modalities with different therapists. Baruch Hashem, like my healing has been great. But, you know, when I've been in, I've had ECT treatments, which is electric convulsion therapy. It's like the modern day electric shock. That's helped me get out of my psychosis. And I felt, When I got, you know, those first years in Israel, you know, a lot of people were like, don't tell anyone. You don't want to people to think differently of you. But it was actually a blessing in disguise that my illness was never really totally a secret, because I would come up to people and say, I have bipolar, and, you know, and people would see something's wrong. Rifki, I know you from Israel, and I don't even remember, like, if you had seen me ever in that state.
I did. Yeah, I do. Yeah, one time I did. Yeah.
Meaning this is once you already had your baby or before that?
When Rifki knew you? Only after. Yeah, we met after. Uh-huh. I had already had my son for, yeah. I don't know, he was about two or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, he was a toddler. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a toddler. And Baruch Hashem, you know, I now have, you know, four children, four sons, and each one of them, the first three I had, you know, postpartum responses for, Baruch Hashem. My last one I didn't, although I did have another episode with my psychosis in 2 years, 2 years ago, actually, and was hospitalized. So it's been a lot of things, and being told, like, you know, people are going to think differently of you. It was a struggle of, like, they know, but I'm not supposed to say anything, but everyone's going to think, you know, badly of me. And the stigma was, you know, this was going back 17 years ago. Wow. When it first started. And, you know, the stigma was very, very strong. And there was a lot of, you know, secrecy and almost like causing me shame, like as if I'm not good enough because, you know, I went through something like this. But it really, really helped from the very start having someone who went through it themselves, who understood that this is just like an illness like any other. When I said, I don't want to do it, I don't want to stop nursing, I don't want to take medication, she said to me, like, your baby that you're holding right now, if he would have strep, would you go and get antibiotics for him? Like, go get yourself some medicine. Like, it's just like any other illness. And it's just like strep. Like, I remember her saying that. Wow. Who walks around feeling shame of having strep, you know?
Hmm. Can I ask you a question? Did you note any... It sounded like, as you said, this was triggered by the trauma of childbirth. As a child, as a teen, before you were married, were there any signs that you were dealing with a mental illness?
So no, like really not. I'm saying the only one thing that really is technically a hormonal imbalance was that I found out I had low thyroid mm-hmm. at the age of 18. But I had the normal teenage mood swings that you would normally have. Maybe I would like leave it all for home and act on the outside like I'm doing great. But everything was suppressed, you know, as far as the emotional baggage I was holding. But no, that was like the shock. You know, I'm 23 years old. I had the same stigma against mental health. I remember hearing as a kid, like, manic depressive. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so freaky. Are they like on park benches? Are mm-hmm. they... You know, and then when I had it and I realized like, this is really just like any other illness. And I remember her telling me, she's like, you know, you're not an amazing person to have a, despite your challenge, you're who you are because of what you're going through, because of your challenge. So fast forward, I was living in Israel for 6 years. I moved back to America, to my hometown. And when I lived there, there was a woman, also amazing, another woman. I'm just so grateful to have these different mentors throughout my life, who said to me, there's an OA 12-step group that they're starting for the From Women. So it wasn't a big community. It was only like five or six of us. And we came in the room and they're talking about the whole 12 steps of recovery. And besides the fact that, you know, I thought, oh, all my problems are because of my food, my eating. Like, okay, let me get... you know, straight into this. But what I found in working with the 12 step was about two and a half years that I was involved with different fellowships. But what I loved about it was one of my sponsors told me as like an assignment besides the food plan was one of the tools. And that was service and going out and seeing how you can be helpful to the next person who's struggling. And I was assigned to call three different people every single day from that was my outreach list, and just call them and see how they're doing. And I saw that by going and giving someone else strength, like I felt that would help me in my recovery. And that's exactly why they have this tool.
Wow.
So I saw that the benefit of not only the service of helping others, but I also saw that it was all about peer support. It was all about, we're in this together. It's not like, oh, that must be so hard. It's like, I know that's so hard. I've been through it myself. And so between those, like those two seeds planting in me in terms of like how much it helps in recovery, I saw I was less into the food aspect of it, but more into these specific tools. So I ended up finding a poster that said, there's a phone meeting. At that time, I did tons of different, like I shared my experience, strength, and hope all together with the, I mean, I mentioned that I do have bipolar, but it was really about like my whole eating journey. And then I started a meeting in my hometown, like in a local library. And it was also like broadcasted, like on phone. It became one of the phone meetings of the fellowship. And I saw that I can make a phone meeting. I saw that I was able to share my experience, strength, and hope openly. And then I saw this poster that was a phone meeting for Jewish women with infertility issues. And I was like, oh, wow, they have such a thing? Like for Jewish women, a phone meeting for talking about challenges? Like it must have something for women who have a mental illness. Like, you know, there's a phone support group for that. And they didn't. And I made calls to anybody possible who would have any idea. And everybody said to me, that's such a nice thing. Like, if you let me know, like, let me know if you find anything. And I didn't find it. So long story short, I ended up going to, there's a forum that's called firmsupport.com. Mm-hmm. I went on and it's for any illness. Like there's different threads and different posts talking about different illnesses. And I just clicked on bipolar and I wrote a message on it. And I said, would anyone want to start a phone meeting with me for Jewish women with mental illness? The first response I got was, it's never going to happen.
Oh, wow. That's discouraging.
And a bunch of like, no, no, no. And then I got a private message from my co-founder, Naomi Shulman. And Naomi ended up saying her story to me, and we had such similar experiences. We both were familiar with the 12 steps and we were like on it. And I remember before I even reached out to her, I was like, we got to come up with a name for this. Like, I didn't even know it was going to be an organization. It just shows like when you want to start something, like I never would have thought I would start something so big. And I decided to call it Chazkenu. And I was actually inspired by the organization Samchenu. That's for widows.
Sure.
And I was like, if they're Samchenu, we have to be Chazkenu. And it's really like, it's a tefillah to Hashem to like strengthen us. And not only that we should get chizah, but you know, one of the taglines, Chazkenu is a mental health peer support network for all Jewish women. And we also included family members, wives, mothers, daughters of those who are struggling. Since part of my journey was meeting somebody who found out her husband had bipolar, and giving each other chizah gave such a new awakening of what it means like for my husband. And then she understood her husband for me. So I saw the benefit of having family members. So I called a Chazkenu and I was telling her about this. And we started getting planning on this phone meeting. Then I spoke to my husband's Rosh Hashiva and he said, speak to any therapist, psychiatrist out there that you could possibly do and tell them your idea. So I was in touch with Rabbi Abraham J. Chorsky, Dr. Abraham J. Chorsky Dotel, and he was like, go for it. This is so needed. I spoke to Shmuel Kamenetsky also. This is amazing, beautiful, Avodas HaKodesh, and all different Rabbanim. And then I started going through my like memory of any therapist I ever liked hearing from. And I remembered, it was so random when I was single, I remember hearing a speech from Rabbi Dr. Jerry Loeb in Chicago, who's a therapist and a rabbi. And I was so inspired by him. He talked about five love languages, like can't get better than that, right? And then I call him up and I was like, you don't know me, my name is Havalist, and I want to start this phone meeting or I want to start something called Chazkenu. And he said to me, okay, this sounds really amazing. Like send me your proposal. Like proposal, like phone meeting, like what are you talking about? But that got my mind started. But then at the end of the conversation, he said, actually, there's someone in my shul who was talking to me, this woman wanted to start something like this, give her a call. And that was my second co-founder, Tamar Mishkin, from Chicago, who she also went through something similar, also understood the 12 steps, was totally on board with my mission. And at that night, when he told me the proposal, I wrote all of my dreams, you know, everything, having a partner program and, you know, and a Shabbaton and all these different ideas that I had, which we ended up accomplishing in less than a year, you know, all of the things that we wanted to do.
When was this? What year?
So it was March of 2016 was our first phone meeting. And we've done now, like, for sure over, like, we do it biweekly, the phone meeting now. And we also now started since for two plus years in Zoom, we started Zoom from COVID, which has been the biggest bracha. So 4 days a week, we have these meetings and, you know, it branched out to a lot of different projects and programs that we do to support the women who are struggling. Mm,
tell us, what is a meeting? Like, what does that look like?
So it happens to be that I modeled the first phone meeting after the 12 steps. You know, the 12 step program of recovery, where somebody presents, either we have, and we added not only a personal story, we also have different professionals. We've had hundreds of professionals talk about different modalities or different chizuk and education, inspiration for the women. So they speak for up to 20 minutes. Then we have question and answers, like, till the end of the hour. And then we have a whole half hour of an open forum. And the moderator is led by one of our Cheskenu sisters. We call ourselves Cheskenu sisters, Cheskenu family. We really become like, you know, we're all together in this. It's led with, there's a format and there's a, you know, a script and we really do have this idea. I tell all the newcomers, we're all about giving chizuk and getting chizuk. It's not about dumping. It's not bringing people down with each other. It's really about, even when we want to be real and we want to be sincere. And if somebody is genuinely sharing their experience with us, they say it in terms of like, so does anyone have ideas? Mm. Like, does anyone else relate? Meaning we give validation and we give tips and it just becomes so encouraging. So that next half hour after the speaker goes off, if it's a professional, and obviously if it's a member, she stays on, and we have an open forum. And in the open forum, we talk about all these different things that come up, or even just general, you know, things that we've heard that we're inspired by. It's a very uplifting experience. Mm-hmm. And when COVID hit, we weren't able to have one of our live events. That's another thing that we do. So we decided to do a Zoom Simchas Pesach Shoeva for that. A Zoom party. It was Pesach, Chol HaMoed. And we ended up having like such an amazing time on Zoom that we decided to start Zoom events, where we do have also speakers and we have we also have, like, tonight we have a singer and she's doing gratitude meditation with us. And like, we've had cooking demos and we've had dancers and all different things. It's like, it's really amazing.
That sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in these phone call groups, now they're only Zoom or they're also on the phone?
Both.
Uh-huh.
Two phones, two Zooms.
Uh-huh. And how many women typically are in a group, and how, if someone would want to join one of these groups, how would one go about that?
Right. So these are really the flagship programs that we have. I mean, there's so many different ways that people have connected to Cheskenu. We have daily emails. We have an online forum. We have a partner program where we set people up one-on-one. We have Shabbatons. We have all different live events everywhere. You know, this has become an international organization. Mm. You know, we have representatives from Israel and the UK. We have women in Australia, South Africa, like Incredible. Many different countries. And so when somebody wants to join, they either can call our intake line, or they can go onto our website, they can also email us. And then we do everything is completely confidential. We always say anonymity is the foundation of our program, like the 12 steps program says, it's the glue that keeps us together, said one of the relief heads, you know, the relief referral agency. You know, so many people have been so grateful that we've started something like this. It was a need that needed to be filled.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. And we'll put all of that contact information in our show notes if anyone wants to go check that out, of course.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So you asked how many.
Yeah.
You asked how many. So we've had up to about 100 Zoom or a call, 50, 70 sometimes. And sometimes we'll have like 25. Like, it really depends, you know, on people's availability and, you know, if somebody's interested in the topic or some people prefer personal stories, some people like the professionals, I'm both, you know.
Right.
We've had people for years, you know, and just speaking about confidentiality, like, you see a tremendous amount of growth in people's acceptance of themselves, like taking away that self stigma. And, you know, somebody will come in and be like, not want to say anything, be a silent listener on the phone meetings, you know, like totally, you know, don't want to open up at all. And now they're moderating, they're starting live events, they're, you know, many people have shared their story publicly. Like, they've really, you know, you see the metamorphosis when you're in an environment where there's total acceptance and appreciation for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
And imagine also, like, on the Zoom, like, when you say confidential, anonymous, like, is there a name up there if they are a newcomer to one of these Zoom groups?
So everybody chooses what they want. You know, there's no one, there's no rule. You know, you can have your video off. You can make up a name. Right. I have some iPhones and smiles highs, you know. And then, there, you know, again, also you see the change in that where someone just like came on as a hi and now they came on with a name and now they just hosted an event in their house, like literally this week.
Wow.
So, you know.
That's beautiful.
You take people exactly where they're at.
Amazing. Yeah. So, you know, obviously we looked at your website, which we're linking to the show notes, and you described Huskino as a, quote, peer-led mental health support group. So just curious, like, what that means, how it plays out. And you did mention, you know, a little bit about professionals being involved. Like, how are the professionals involved in providing guidance? And are, you know, what's that balance of the peer-led versus the professional piece?
Yeah, 100%. So, we have a clinical advisor, actually have two of them, that, you know, any policies that we have, any situations that come up that are challenging that we need a, you know, a clinical perspective on, we have these two therapists that do that. We have also rabbinical advisor. We have three rabbanim now involved in Huskino, both answering my questions about the leading of the organization, but also for the members to reach out to, because so many halacha and mental health go together so much. So everything is based on getting, you know, advice from people who know way more than me. But what we wanted is something, we wanted to give something that has never been there before. And that was an organization to help people, women who are struggling. I always say it's like by the people for the people. And, you know, like, we're really there to, you know, Rabbi Grossberg, Rabbi Yisrael Grossberg, who's our rabbinical advisor, he always says, like, Ein chacham kebal nisayon. There's no wiser person. There's no someone who knows more than someone who's been through the same challenges you have. Mm. And that's what makes us unique, that we can be there to really show empathy. We, you know, we could say, like, this is, you know, we get it. Not just like, that must be so hard. I know it's so hard. And, you know, we want people to hold our hands, you know, and through when we're struggling. And that's really why, you know, we do have now that we've expanded and we've gotten to become, you know, we don't count exactly, but, you know, over thousands, you know, for sure, maybe even thousands of members right now. And we have now some, like, social work interns that help with some of the technical work, like my email secretary or, you know, different things like that. But the actual people who are running the organization, the people who are passionate about it, since they really need this. Like, I needed this all my life, like, all my mental health journey life. I needed people to just be there for me and understand me and where I could talk about it openly and just get this, like, non-judgmental, like, real acceptance. And and that's the power in the fact that we have people who are, you know, going through this. And so many people feel like this was the biggest gift, to be able to lead and help and be there for another person. It's given them so much recovery.
That's amazing.
So that's where our balance is.
Wow. I'm just so impressed with like the fact that you went through this journey yourself, and then you had like the koach, like literally the strength to like do make something bigger than just your own struggle and like be there for other people. I don't know. I think that's just incredible because it's so, I'd imagine it's so easy to be wallowing in your distress, but then to like get above and beyond that and try to help others and create an organization to me is just mind boggling.
Thank you so much. You know, it's given me so much. And I would say, you know, there's the refua before the maka, you know, like Hashem prepares what you need before he gives you, you know, the hardships. And 2 years ago when I was hospitalized and really not well, I had Chazkinu there for me.
Wow.
I had people step up and say, Zahava, what can we do? What, wow. Like, we get it. Like, I was able to come back and say, I went to the hospital and this is what it was like. And I had a whole community. I had a whole family of people who wanted to hear and wanted to give that real encouragement and empathy. I always say we do our three main things are encouragement, empathy, and empowerment. Hmm. And, you know, not only to say, like, you can do this, but more, I get it, I understand, I'm empathizing. And then it empowers people to move forward and be the best wife and the best mother and the best, you know, employee and the best Eved Hashem, you know, and we want people to be the best versions of themselves. So it really has been a tremendous amount of chizuk for me in my own life and in my family.
It's phenomenal. I can imagine that it just speeds along and moves along the recovery so much more quickly to have that integral of a support system that not just for the validation, but for the chizuk, you know, to be able to 100%. Say like, yeah, this is, you know, there's nothing, it's not bad. It's not shameful. Like this is part of the nisayon that Hashem gave you and let's run with it. Let's mm-hmm. go for it. Let's still 100%. Live our best life. I was thinking about, you had said, you know, 17 years ago, which is like, wow, let's just take a moment. That's a lot of experience with just seeing the evolution of the Frum community's relationship with mental illness. And I would love to hear your perspective about the thought. What are your thoughts about the stigma surrounding mental health in the Frum community? How has it changed? How would you love to see it change more? Like what do you love that has been the kind of progress that we've had in the community to date?
100%. Just going back to what we said about the professionals is that I've had therapists thank me for the fact that this has helped their client in their recovery because, you know, a professional can only do so much seeing them once a week and, you know, giving them, but having this constant, you know, our emails are every single day that we send out, like almost like mini newsletters, you know, chizuk and so many things. So, you know, this has really filled a void. As far as stigma, so I have to really quote my son, who's now 12, but at the time it was 2 years ago, 10. And I'm very, very open about with my family. Like I, you know, when the kids see my medicine, oh, that's for bipolar. Like, you know, we talk about it all the time. I feel like the conversation has to be open when it comes to talking about this struggle, just like any other struggle. So I would say when I told I told him at a very young age, when I talked about it with my 10-year-old and I talked about stigma, he's like, what's stigma? And I was describing to him what it's like, you know? And he said, oh, you mean like judgment, like judging other people? And I was like, yes. And so the two of us wrote a song based on the actual, one of our mantras, which is the stigma stops here, like a stop sign, you know, we don't even allow it in. And it was really just about like, we all have challenges and we all have gone through something. There is no one who's, you know, who's out there that doesn't have a struggle,
right?
You know, and it's really just this idea, like loving people just for the sake and accepting people for the sake of who they are. This is a fundamental thing in Yiddishkeit. You know, we have the idea of Al tadin es chavercha ad shetigel mekomo. We don't judge a person until you've reached their place. You know, we have the idea of an ayin toval from Pirkei Avos, you know, looking for the good, seeing the good in other people, not just seeing things at face value. It's the fundamental part of our Yiddishkeit. So what we really have come to see is that it's the stigma comes into two parts with us. You know, there's the self stigma, removing ourselves and getting ourselves that acceptance and that unconditional love for who we are inside, no matter what our struggle is. And I always say, like, Do I walk around saying, you know, like, why should I be shameful of bipolar more than if I would have high blood pressure? Mm-hmm. You know, if someone has high blood pressure, yeah, they're, it's frustrating to have to take medication for it and, you know, change their eating and exercise, but they, you know, they're not walking around with shame for high blood pressure. It shouldn't be any different with a mental illness. And I always also say that my goal is to really strengthen the people who are going through this, because if I'm, you know, I talk about my story as if I'm talking about my recipe for cheesecake. I talk about it so freely, so openly. And even when I moved to Baltimore 5 years ago, I, you know, people came, you know, came up to me and said, what do you do? And I said, I have a peer support organization. I have bipolar. And I, you know, I started something, you know, for the firm community. And people were like, wow, that's so needed. Or, wow, you know, I'm going through something like this. I could use your help. Or my husband is going through this. My neighbor's going through this. You know, it affects one in every three people. That means if you look to this side or you look to that side, it's either you have it or those two have it.
Bipolar you know? Or general mental
illness? No, I'm talking about mental illness in general. Like, people are affected by mental illness in so many ways. There's no one out there that doesn't know somebody who's struggling.
Right.
So I have to share this with you. I always say, like, yes, we want the whole firm community to get an understanding and a perspective. And that's what you guys are giving me, the opportunity to speak on behalf of so many people who are struggling. At the same time, I always say, what we can do, what we have, what I'm empowered and I'm empowering others to do, is to change the next generation. When I tell my kids and talk about it with my kids, it makes all the difference in terms of the way they feel about it. And I also say that, you know, speaking to anyone, like, I spoke in a seminary this year and I told my whole story and I talked about getting rid of the stigma. And I said, these girls are about to embark on their life journey. Like, look, they can have this as their ammunition. They could remember it, whether they're going through it or they're, you know, anyone they know, they can change history. They can change what, you know, the perspective. And at the end, I asked for questions and a girl came and she answered, you know, a girl asked the question and she said, no, I actually don't have a question. I actually want to tell all of you that if you think that you don't know anyone with a mental illness, you're wrong. Because I have anxiety and I have depression and I've been hospitalized with it and I've grown from it. And there was like not a dry eye. We gave her a standing ovation. I was just so amazed to see that because I was open with my struggle, she was able to have the courage to tell everyone else what she's going through. And, you know, it's really like, it's almost contagious. You know, if I walk around without a stigma, it can go on to the next person as well.
Well, obviously, I think you're playing a huge role in stopping the stigma, which that's your language, right? Putting a stop to it. What are your thoughts in general in terms of, you know, I know, like, for example, many of our magazines really are discussing openly mental health issues, whether it's in fiction, nonfiction articles and things like that. Do you think things have improved the last 5-10 years or is there still work that needs to be done?
Oh, there's definitely work that needs to be done. But I do want to say that the community has changed so much in terms of wanting to know knowledge, in terms of, you know, people sharing their stories more in articles. And the AMI, they had a woman share her story with including her name. Wow. Like, it's definitely, you know, more therapists are out there on podcasts and, you know, talking more in their everyday life. Like, mental illness has become something that people discuss, and that's huge. It's not like completely taboo. How could it improve? I think really when it comes to Shidduchim, I think people have really, I mean, people talk about Shidduchim, you know, have a hard time with people who are divorced, you know, whose parents are divorced, or if they're a little bit overweight. Like, there's so many things when it comes to Shidduchim. But that's something that needs to be really changed as a whole, you know, seeing the person for who they are completely. I would say that because it affects the mood and it changes a person's behavior, it's easy to look at somebody like they're weird or they're not normal, which I don't like the word normal in describing people. You know, it's you know, they cycle in the washing machine. It's not, it's not a person, right? But I would say, like, if somebody's a little different, you know, in terms of how they're going through their own life, people automatically come up and jump into conclusions sometimes. And what I would say is that if somebody is taking medication, somebody is seeing therapy, and they're putting effort into, you know, their own recovery and their whole healing, they could function so well. And they can be doing things like starting an organization. You know, there's so many amazing things about those who are, who's struggling, just like anyone else who's struggling. Like, it doesn't limit a person. And unfortunately, there are people walking around with that feeling. You know, I've had, you know, jobs that I was unhired from because of my mental illness. Wow. You know, I've had people stop talking to me because of my mental illness, or people treating me differently. You know, like, there have definitely been times where I felt like a very strong stigma. And that's why I say, you know, if people just educate themselves and they really just get to know, like, you know, there's so many different types of mental illnesses, whether it's anxiety disorders, mood disorders, you know, eating disorders, you know, like anything, trauma, I say, is always like the basis, you know, PTSD. When someone's going through these things, like, it just understand, like, where it's functioning in the brain. You know, there's so much mystery in psychology. Mm-hmm. And the doctors often know when a medicine is working just by seeing what the signs are in a person. So there's so much that people don't know and the world doesn't know. But it's slowly, more research is coming in where you can actually see the brain of somebody who has a mood disorder and the brain of someone who doesn't, and you can see differences. So again, just educating ourselves, being able to look beyond the surface, can make all the difference in stigma.
That's fantastic. And I want to just highlight the idea of that someone who has a mental illness and has been working on themselves and, you know, discovering tools in order to be able to function well might even have a leg up on someone who has never had to go through a challenge, you know, like, because they've worked on themselves and they've gone through a challenge in a way that has given them the tools and resiliency, Bezos Hashem, to really be on just like another level of functioning. So it's
100%. There's so much self-awareness that I've gotten, so many tools and relationships and relationship with myself, with Hashem, with others. You know, sometimes I feel like you know, something gets a little broken, you know, and if you fix it, like, often, like, I broke my leg in sixth grade, and it was my right leg. I'm a lefty. But when I broke my leg, after it got healed, my right, you know, that's what I use it for everything.
Funny.
And I feel like it recovered and is stronger, right? So I feel like people get stronger because of what they go through.
Yeah.
There's so much that out there that, you know, people can really tap into in terms of like information and understanding. Yeah. I find reading people's stories, hearing people's stories makes such a difference. You know, we've had, like I said, hundreds of professionals and personal stories. We even have an archive for our members to hear right now. Not everyone has been recorded, but we have about 550 something recordings now of just all of this, you know? And I feel like I know you guys ask about book recommendations, but we'll get to that, but there are books of people who share their stories.
Wow.
And really reading that and opening your eyes to what's really going on really changes things.
Amazing. No, I think Rifki's point is very, very important. We also know how many Americans, for example, don't have access to mental health support due to, you know, therapy being expensive or not covered by insurance.
Or taking at least 5 months to get into the doctor.
Yes. And I think it's a real mental health crisis in this country. I'd love to know if you have any thoughts about that for people who are like, I want to go to therapy, but like the therapist doesn't accept my insurance and I have to pay out of pocket. I think what you're offering is incredibly important. It cannot be in place of therapy, but I'm sure it's hugely important to have the support group. But what about people who just don't have the access to the therapy?
Oh, it's very hard. I mean, we're not, you didn't even mention that. What another challenge, even getting ourselves to realize that we need help is also just like the biggie. But assuming somebody has the knowledge and the acceptance of I need help and I can get help, it is hard. I mean, I'm saying like there, I think like just like anything, you know, when you have to go to a specialist, you know, and you know that this doctor is going to be the best in healing you, then whatever resources you can get possible, it's worth it. You know, I mean, obviously I find therapists myself, I could talk for myself, who take sliding scales if they do are private, and they go according to, you know, the most I can afford. Mm. I'm very lucky to also have some support from the outside through an organization to help with some of my costs, which I'm grateful for, but it's very difficult. I always say we need to start something called Kaspinu, money, like to get all the money that we can for people who are going through this. And I just want to put it out there that if somebody does have the resources to help, you know, it's a tremendous, you're building worlds mm-hmm. by giving money towards somebody's treatment and somebody's help. And really it's, for me, it's getting me through so many things, like the therapy that I've been through. Like I haven't stopped since I started mm-hmm. because I've gained so much from it. It's opened me up from the inside, the depths of the inside out. And I would never be who I am today without getting proper therapy and medication.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Tell us a little bit about the range of mental health issues that you see facing the From Women Who Find Support through Kaspinu. Let's say like a typical Zoom meeting or typical phone call meeting. I don't know if I'm using the right language. You know, what are people struggling with?
So, I mean, you name it. Anything that really is considered a mental illness. So, and we're talking about anybody as far as bipolar, depression, all different types of anxiety, social anxiety, you know, OCD, you know, PTSD, like we said, you know, like really the list is endless, you know, when it comes to, you know, any kind of phobias or insomnia or, you know, really dissociative disorders or, you know, addictions, so many different types of challenges that people have gone through. And we even see like people who don't necessarily have a specific diagnosis, but have, you know, we also, I didn't mention personality disorders, you know, so we take anybody who really is struggling when it comes emotionally, like it's all through any gamut. Like people have gone through so many different types of, some of them have multiple, you know, it doesn't only come in one, it comes in many shapes and sizes when it comes to mental illness. Like I was diagnosed with bipolar, but I also have PTSD. I also have, you know, some anxiety and OCD in the mix, you know, I have tendencies. And
right, a lot of these things overlap with each other. There's a lot of overlapping.
You do. There's so many. There's even, you know, something called seasonal affective disorder.
Right.
And that's coming out now that the summer is over.
Especially here in Cleveland with all the gray and the snow.
So the idea is that, like, we're not alone. Like, I think that's the best piece. Like, even if I may have XYZ diagnosis and the person, you know, no one else in the room has it, but, like, that we're all struggling and we're all trying to, you know, support each other, I think is probably the most powerful thing. You're not suffering
we're totally alone. It's totally like that. It's like, I get it. Me too. You know, people want to hear that. They're not the only one. Mm-hmm. That's what a person should know, you know, like, that they just, I'm not alone in this. Mm-hmm. I have others who can understand me.
Right. That's so moving. It's so bolstering. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, Zahava, when Alex was asking about therapy being accessible, you mentioned about people even realizing that therapy is something they need in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I would love to have you share with our listeners, what is the first step that you recommend for someone who is just embarking on their mental health journey? Maybe they just had an inkling just recently that maybe something is amiss and they don't even know where to start. So where should they start?
Right. So they, first of all, should know in their heart of hearts that it's not their fault, that this is just an illness like any other illness, really coming to accept that they can. I do believe that a big part of the healing is believing that you can heal, that things can get better. So with a certain mindset of like that, there's a solution out there. There is recovery out there. That I'm not the only one, that there are different resources out there in the community, specifically for me who's going through this. And I would first of all assess, you know, do I need a psychiatrist? You know, medication is something people resist. And I think it's because people don't understand that, again, it's just like any other medication you would take for illness. You know, my body cannot, just like the hormones in my, you know, for thyroid, you know, my pituitary gland doesn't give enough, you know, thyroid hormone. It's also sometimes we just need something that we're missing. Medication gives us back our control. one of my therapists said that medication is like a good friend. Whatever you're not having, you know, if I'm not a patient person, but I have a friend who's very patient, I want to get something from them that I don't have. They're giving me something I'm missing. The medication's just giving us something that we're missing. And then there's the therapy. I would say it's like a threefold thing, right? There's also the finding the therapist. You know, don't settle. If somebody, you know, you see after a few sessions, you're not going anywhere. This is not a shit up. It is a shit up. And don't give up until you find the therapist, the modality that they use. I really believe that a therapist should have a specific modality that they are working with and not just talking. I've had that. Finding, you know, a therapist that works for you and the personality that works for you. You know, really seeking it. Sometimes it's more acute. And that means sometimes you need to be in a partial hospitalization or, you know, some kind of intensive outpatient program. Finding the need that you have and looking, searching out there, because it's out there. It is. I of course believe that's where the peer, you know, is. Find people out there who can understand you, who can empathize with you, who will appreciate you no matter what, and try to drown out the people who are judging or people who are you're not comfortable with. But having the peer, I feel like, is just as important as the pill. It's literally
so powerful. That's a tagline for your organization right there.
Exactly.
Well, you are just, you're such a wealth of knowledge and wisdom and experience. Tell us, mm-hmm. we're going to pick your brain a little bit. If you have a book or a speaker recommendation for our listeners who want to further explore, you know, the topics that we've discussed today.
Yeah, 100%. So our co-founder, both my co-founders have started their own journeys in starting their own programs and projects. Tamara is now doing a organization that she started called Labriute, which started in her own town where she does peer support, but she also has really opened it up to the whole community. My other co-founder, Naomi Shulman, started writing. She's a gifted writer, and she wrote a book called With All I Am. In that book, she shares her stories and struggles and how she's not only connected to Hashem on such a deep level with all she is, with all I am, with everything she's been through.
Wow.
A tremendous book. There's also another book called Battle of the Mind, and that's by Rabbi Avram Steyer. It's actually out of print, but they're hoping to reprint it soon. It's a Torah perspective on mental illness, and it's incredible research, and he comes to our Shabbatons that we have, and he's so sensitive and understanding when it comes to it, and he's found sources in actual Chazal that teach us, you know, about mental illness. There's also a book that was inspired by Chazkenu. There's someone named Rivka Kaufman who we had a discussion about how kids just need to be told and need to be talked about in a sensitive way about what mental illness in their own terms, in their own language. She wrote a book called What's Going On With My Mother by Rivka Kaufman. And that's an incredible resource for parents. And it's about a child finding out about their mother's depression and being very confused by it and feeling like, is it my fault? So, so important to have the discussion, to have an open discussion about it.
Wow.
And then there's two books that came out pretty recently. There's Yoni Palmer wrote a book called Depressed.
Yes.
Also sharing his story.
I heard about that.
And
this
then
is
a book
for a man who is like being open about his personal mental health journey. It's really, really phenomenal.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just one more is called Calling Out to You by Tehila Edelman. Has a bunch of stories together that really bring out people's journeys and with different diagnoses and everything.
Wow. Well, we will be linking these. This is so helpful. We'll be linking all of them in our show notes. Thank you, Zahava, so much for joining us on DMC today.
Thank you.
I really feel speechless. There's so much that I've learned from you. And I, most of all, I'm just so inspired by, wow, like, you are stopping the stigma just by being who you are and the tremendous work that you've done to help the From community. So thank you. Thank you from Rifki and I.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we represent so many women who are listening who are appreciating the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. I did want to just end with, first of all, thanking you for giving me this forum and hopefully it should be validating and you know, really an encouragement, a chizuk for anyone out there who's struggling. And also just the empowerment and education for those who want to know more about it. And I do want to say something that my Rav, Rabbi Yisrael Grossberg, says, that the pain of a mental illness is unavoidable. It just comes along with it. But the pain of stigma is avoidable. And I think that's what you guys are doing for all of us in the mental health from community. You're really giving us that ability to take away another layer of stigma. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you for joining us. We're honored.
Here is this episode's takeaway. The goal of Chazkenu is to strengthen ourselves by strengthening others, to connect with others who are going through similar challenges, and to try to remove the isolation that comes along with mental illness. If you are struggling with a diagnosed or undiagnosed mental illness, don't underestimate the power of support from others who are experiencing something similar. Consider reaching out to Chazkenu. There's links to how to be in touch with them in the show notes.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of DMC. If you know of someone who would benefit from this episode, please feel free to share a link with them. And while you're at it, leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to this episode now.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, send us an email to dmc@meaningfulminute.org. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. We love hearing from our listeners. Your support and feedback makes our podcast better. See you next episode.